Backstory. Who is Dr. W. Edwards Deming? Dr. Deming wrote, quote, "It is so easy to do nothing. It's a challenge to do something. Learning is not compulsory, it's voluntary. Improvement is not compulsory, it's voluntary. But to survive, we must learn. The penalty for ignorance is that you get beat up. There is no substitute for knowledge, yet time is of the essence." The innovation engineering movement is focused on changing the world by enabling innovation by everyone, everywhere, every day, resulting in increased innovation speed and decreased risk. This is not marketing puffery, but rather a clear statement of intent that is grounded in the success that Dr. W. Edwards Deming had in helping rebuild and restart the country of Japan in the 1950s and the Western world in the 1980s. The transformation of Japan. After World War II, the country of Japan had a negative net worth. It owned no natural resources. All oil, steel, wood, etc., had to be purchased off the island and shipped in. Its infrastructure was in shambles. There were no factories, no communications, or transportation system. Further, its reputation was clearly defined worldwide as a maker of very poor quality products. And the reputation was a truth, not a perception. I remember growing up seeing Made in Japan on something, and even as a child, knowing that it would be poor quality. Nowhere in the world today is there anything that even approaches the reality of how bad Japanese quality was. It has been said that the poor quality of goods made in Japan to support their troops was a key contributing factor to their defeat in World War II. At the end of World War II, General Douglas MacArthur was charged by U.S. President Harry Truman with leading the process of post-war reconstruction of Japan. One of his immediate problems was that he could not communicate with the Japanese people. There were no newspapers, telephone systems, radio broadcast systems, or even radios of sufficient quality for the people to hear broadcasts. Homer Saracen, an American radio engineer working in the American Army Civil Communications Section, was assigned to help rebuild the Japanese electronics industry. It soon became clear to Saracen that rebuilding the companies in the way they existed previously was not going to be a viable option. A total transformation was required. Saracen, who is often forgotten by history, is the one who ignited the start of the transformation of Japan. With the approval of General MacArthur, Saracen and Charles Protzman developed an 8-week training program based on the work of Walter Schruhart of Bell Labs. The course taught the basics of how to build quality goods through the application of basic system thinking and statistical quality control. It also taught a somewhat idealistic view for the time of the importance of management and workers collaborating for a common purpose. The new leadership of Mitsubishi, Fujitsu, Hitachi, NEC, Toshiba, and others attended the course. And I say new leadership, as MacArthur had fired the 2,000 top leaders of Japanese electronics companies due to concerns about their involvement in the war effort. In some cases, a person from the factory was suddenly and sometimes randomly selected to be a company leader. The new leaders did as they were told. Of course, I mean, what choice did they have? The occupying army had told them they had no choice and had already removed their bosses. The replacement of all leadership and the rebuilding of companies from the ground up made for a once-in-a-lifetime experiment in the power of implementing a new method of leadership thinking. The result was a far greater cultural transformation than would later occur in the USA, Canada, and other parts of the world, where companies adopted incremental components of the mindset as opposed to embracing a total transformation. When you understand the situation in Japan, it's easier to understand the words of Dr. Deming from the opening of his book, Out of the Crisis, on the need for a total transformation of mindset. He wrote, The aim of this book is transformation of the style of management. Transformation of management is not a job of reconstruction, nor is it revision. It requires a whole new structure from the foundation upward. Mutation might be the word, except that mutation implies unordered spontaneity. Transformation must take place with directed effort. The aim of this book is to supply the direction. Dr. Deming arrives in Japan. In 1950, Saracen and Protzman returned to the USA. To keep the quality movement going, Saracen and others suggested that Dr. Deming should lead a series of training programs to help take the Japanese companies to a new level of quality and success. Dr. Deming was an early student and longtime collaborator with Schuchart. His work with the War Production Board helped America produce the goods needed during World War II. He was also familiar with Japan as he taught there in 1947 and 1948 on behalf of the U.S. Department of Defense. At the Hotel de Yama on July 13, 1950, Dr. Deming taught a course on elementary principles of the statistical control of quality. In the audience were industrial leaders representing about 80% of the capital of Japan. On the blackboard, he drew a drawing of manufacturing as a system as opposed to a set of parts and pieces. To view a video of background information on Dr. Deming and his delivery of the Deming drawing from the Deming Library, courtesy of Claire Crawford and Bob Mason, go to innovationengineering.org/drawing. In my mind, there are two very important concepts in the drawing. Both of these concepts had never been well understood by leadership of companies outside of Japan. Deming drawing, key concept one, collaboration. Fundamental to the drawing is the interconnected nature of the entire system. All functions are interdependent on all others. All departments are part of a system whose aim is to help the end customer or consumer. Success, as Dr. Acuff teaches, is the product of the interaction of the parts. The value of a department lies in its ability to aid the rest of the departments in delivery of value to the end customer or consumer. Contrast this mindset with the current reward structure in most organizations that primarily rewards individual, then departmental excellence, and to a minor extent, if at all, the value of collaboration. By design, groups compete with each other for rewards and resources. The result is victory for the few and defeat for the organization. For example, an automobile plant makes cars with low initial defects by investing in intensive inspection and rework to remove obvious defects. However, because quality is inspected in and not built into the vehicles, defects that can't be seen still exist. These defects result in warranty claims that for many manufacturers end up costing twice what Japanese car companies pay. In the end, the automaker claims their cars are high quality as a result of low initial defects, but still go bankrupt because of warranty claims. Deming drawing, key concept two, innovation. The other concept embedded in the Deming drawing is the use of innovation to spark never-ending continuous improvement. The drawing shows the need for consumer research, and I've added the words to get ahead of customers, as this is the primary driver of the Deming cycle. In the video, Deming outlines the need for proactive innovation as a key driver of change in his manufacturing system. Quote, products are distributed. There is consumer research, not just to find out what went wrong, but it ought to be to learn what will help the customer in the future, what will get ahead of the customer to entice him to buy it. Lean and Six Sigma programs usually misunderstand this continuous improvement loop. They interpret its primary purpose as being the reduction of cost. For Dr. Deming, its primary purpose is what he called constancy of purpose. And this meant changes in what products and services are offered so to assure the longtime success of the organization. He wrote about it this way in Out of the Crisis. Establishment of constancy of purpose means accepting obligations like the following. A, innovate. Allocate resources for long-term planning. Plans for the future call for consideration of new service and new product that may help people to live better materially and that will have a market. One requirement for innovation is faith there will be a future. Innovation, the foundation of the future, cannot thrive unless the top management have declared unshakable commitment. B, put resources into research and education. C, constantly improve design of product and service. This obligation never ceases. The consumer is the most important part of the production line. It is a mistake to suppose that efficient production of product or service can, with certainty, keep an organization solvent and ahead of competition. It is possible, and in fact fairly easy, for an organization to go downhill and out of business by making the wrong product or offering the wrong type of service, even though everyone in the organization performs with devotion. Deming is a hero in Japan and ignored in the USA. Over the next 30 years, Deming's fame grew in Japan. They were so impressed with him that they named the National Award for Quality the Deming Prize. But in the USA, he was ignored. His daughter, Linda Hemming Haupt, said, "Whether he would admit it, I don't know. He's a very proud man, but I think he hurt. It's hard to have your mission and not have anyone listen." While it was Saracen who started the transformation in Japan, it was Dr. Deming who took Japanese industry to a world-class level. As Saracen wrote of Dr. Deming in Frank Vohl's book, Deming the Way We Knew Him, quote, "What he actually accomplished, using the quality process as a tool, was a breakthrough in the conscience of hidebound, status quo-oriented industrial leaders. He looked beyond mere statistics and saw the process of controlling quality of performance as a mechanism by which the functions of management could be continuously improved. He recognized the essential nature of a total system. A manufacturing option, for example, was not a succession of individual events, as was the common conception. It properly must be regarded and treated as a continuous, interrelated stream of activities." Why the USA ignored Dr. Deming after World War II? After World War II, North American factories were still standing, while those in Europe and Japan were destroyed. There was an immense pent-up demand for goods because during the war, all resources had been focused on supporting the war effort. In response to the huge demand, U.S. and Canadian manufacturing focused on producing quantity, not quality. In effect, short-term greed prevented company leaders from focusing on building quality. The focus was on making as much as possible as fast as possible. Friction between labor and management grew during this time period. Managers were taught that their job was to manage by numeric production objectives. Now, this mindset is understandable to a degree. When demand is high and you are the only one who can supply the demand, you make more money if you make more products. And to be honest, the demand for products was so great, even an idiot could have been successful leading a manufacturing company in the 50s and 60s. Across North America, a focus was placed on the management of the finances instead of the creation of wild products and technologies. To be specific, the National Center for Education Statistics reports that from 1970 to 2008, the percentage of bachelor degrees in the USA doubled for business majors and declined by 50% for engineers. Interestingly, despite the proportionate decline in engineers, it remains the number one field of study for Fortune 500 CEOs. You see, you can't manage your way to profitability. Profitability comes from products and services that offer wow value enabled by technology that is meaningfully unique versus what your competition offers. The real damage caused by the post-wartime, was that a generation of management came to believe in a set of values and operational principles that were not sustainable or healthy. As a result, some very bad management habits have become cultural norms. The problem in the Western world in the late 1970s. In the late 1970s, the U.S. automobile industry was in a panic, as a market share of the big three, Ford, GM, and Chrysler, had dropped from 82% to 78% in just 3 years. The damage was so bad for Chrysler that in the fall of 1979, they had to apply to the U.S. government for a financial bailout. From 1980 to 1982, the perfect storm hit, and the U.S. economy went into a recession due in part to the Iranian oil embargo. Other beliefs for the recession included 90% of industry executives felt that excessive regulation was the reason for the decline in U.S. productivity. For example, in the auto industry, automakers were required to include airbags and other safety elements. Lazy workers were also thought to be the problem, in particular union workers. Ronald Reagan brought this issue into public consciousness when he dramatically and decisively fired the air traffic controllers who had gone on strike. However, the real root cause of the problem was that the quality of American cars and electronics was no longer viable in the face of higher quality products from Japan. And as Dr. Deming had taught, when you improve quality using a system approach, the cost of production also goes down. The other root cause of the automotive problem was that the Japanese had anticipated the future. They had invested in cars that were smaller and that got higher gas mileage. When you think about it, given the tension in the Middle East, it didn't exactly take a rocket scientist in the 1970s to imagine a scenario in which oil prices might go up, causing disruption to the auto industry. The CEO who brought Deming to U.S. industry. While most executives were giving excuses to Wall Street, one CEO confronted the reality and took a different path. Bill Conway was the CEO of Nasher Corporation, a Fortune 500 company at the time located in Nasher, New Hampshire, that made carbonless paper, computer disks, tape, and copy machine toner. During a trip to Japan in 1979 to work with Ricoh on toner for their copiers, his meeting was delayed because they were preparing their application for the Deming Quality Prize. The idea that top leadership would be involved in quality was not something Bill was familiar with. He would later tell me that no Fortune 500 CEO thought that quality was their responsibility. They had, in effect, outsourced the company's quality to a department that measured and managed it. In a meeting with Dr. Deming during March of 1979, Bill learned that quality had to become part of his job. He had to be personally involved if the National Corporation culture was to make the transformation from being a maker of quantity to a maker of quality. If you think back to the Deming drawing, it's obvious that if quality comes from the interaction of the departments, only the leadership, who are above all departments, can provide the constancy of purpose that true quality requires. A television producer introduces Dr. Deming to American companies. During late 1979, Claire Crawford Mason, a top producer and correspondent for NBC News, was working on an NBC documentary with the working title, Whatever Happened to Good Old Yankee Ingenuity. During her background research, she found Dr. Deming. Mary Walton, in her book, The Deming Management Method, describes what happened. Quote, one day she heard from a faculty member at American University. There's this guy named Deming who lives out in American University Park. Deming, she was told, had done a lot of work in Japan. Crawford Mason contacted Dr. Deming, who invited her out to talk. He spoke of his work in Japan and showed her yellowed clippings of stories the Japanese had written. Crawford Mason didn't know what to think. He was nice, if eccentric. He reminded her of her father. But what he said, if true, was astonishing. He kept going on and on and on that nobody would listen to him. Not for nothing had Crawford Mason put in all those years as a reporter. I thought, here's a good story. The first conversation led to 5 interviews, consuming 25 hours. The more they talked, the more impressed she was, and the more suspicious she got. I mean, it was simply incredible. Here is a man who has the answer, and he's 5 miles from the White House, and nobody will speak to him. She contacted a high-ranking economics official from the Carter administration and asked if he knew W. Edwards Deming. He didn't. Crawford Mason wanted to know if anybody was using his techniques. As it happened, Dr. Deming had just acquired a major client, National Corporation. On June 24, 1980, at 9:30 p.m., with Lloyd Dobbins as narrator, the newly named documentary, If Japan Can, Why Can't We, aired. After setting up the challenge, Dr. Deming was presented as a solution. National President Bill Conway reported that National was saving millions as they improved the quality of their carbonless paper. This was the project my father, M. Bradford Hall, had worked on. The next day, the phone rang endlessly. Procter & Gamble, Xerox, GM, Ford, and Chrysler called Dr. Deming's basement office. Mary Walton describes the situation. "We were bombarded with calls," recalled his assistant. "It was a nightmare. Many of the callers sounded desperate. They have to see him tomorrow or yesterday, or their whole company will collapse," end quote. Deming, who was 80 at the time, instantly became a global celebrity. He gave 4-day seminars, as many as 40 times a year, for up to 400 people. Constancy of purpose and innovation. When I asked Bill Conway what was the most important thing that Dr. Deming taught him, his reply was instant: constancy of purpose. He went on to explain that without constancy of purpose, there is no future. To paraphrase Dr. Deming from his book, Out of the Crisis, quote, "Establishment of constancy of purpose means acceptance of the obligation to innovate. It means to allocate resources for long-term planning of new products and services that may help people to live better materially and that will have a market. One requirement for innovation is faith that there will be a future. Innovation, the foundation of the future, cannot thrive unless the top management have declared unshakable commitment to staying in business long-term. Your customers, your suppliers, your employees need your statement of constancy of purpose, your intention to stay in business by providing product and service that will help many to live better and which will have a market. It is a CEO's job to ensure constancy of purpose. Great leaders anticipate the future by focusing the organization on the very important opportunities and systems required to keep the company alive and to provide jobs for employees. When the CEO has constancy of purpose, then short-term sacrifices are made to maximize long-term success. Sadly, when the CEO is a hired mercenary, brought in for the short-term task, be it to fix the stock price, take the company public, or lean the company up so that it can be sold, then there will be no constancy of purpose. When the CEO is the founder of the organization and committed to being part of it for the long term, there is constancy of purpose. Family-owned and operated companies are more likely to have constancy of purpose. Nonprofit organizations are more likely to have constancy of purpose, as the mission of the organization, not short-term returns, is the driver. Special cause versus common cause errors. To repeat, because it really matters. Core to understanding the Deming mindset is understanding the difference between special cause and common cause errors. The worker causes special cause errors. Examples include if a worker didn't show up on time, fell asleep on the job, or didn't follow the process. Common cause errors are a result of the system. For example, if the raw materials are highly variable and cause issues, or if the tools, training, or technique given to the worker results in unreliable results. Special cause errors have a relatively clear and assignable cause. Common cause errors are more complex as they are usually a result of a multitude of system interactions. The differences between common cause and special cause errors can be easily identified using control charting of standard deviation. As Sorensen wrote, what Dr. Deming did was connect the statistics to management. He taught that 94% of the problem was the system, 6% was special cause due to the worker. And if management is the only one that can improve the system by investing in new training, tools, or techniques to reduce variation in the system, then 94% of the problem is management. 94% of the problem is management, 6% is the worker. In a paper for the Instrument Society of America in 1982, my father wrote, "No improvement of the system will take place unless management attacks common causes with as much science and vigor as the production workers and engineers attack special causes." I've come to believe that Deming was about right with his estimate that 94% of problems are caused by the system. I've also come to believe that he was wrong and stated that 94% of the problem is management. While only management can lead the transformation, they can't do it by themselves. In today's world of rapid change and increasing technical complexity, management can't fix the system by themselves. The workers need to take responsibility for improving the system. Yes, management can provide the workers with training, resources, and most important of all, clear strategic direction, but the workers, those close to the work, must also take responsibility for the long-term success of the organization. Deming's relevance and business descendants. In today's service and digital-focused economy, Dr. Deming's system mindset is even more important. The Deming drawing principle of collaboration is still fundamental for success. The principle of using innovation to get ahead of the customer is a basic survival skill in today's marketplace. A genuine challenge with applying Dr. Deming's teaching in today's world lies in drawing control charts of human work systems to separate common cause from special cause variation. Gathering the data to draw control charts is very challenging with human systems because of human insecurity. A machine doesn't worry about what you will think of it when it gives you data. However, a human becomes defensive and quickly starts to game the data, making it meaningless. When you do get the data on human systems, you quickly find that most humans' work processes have massive variance. They are, in Dr. Deming's words, out of control. The variance in technique, raw inputs, tools, materials, and worker training results in slow speed due to rework and high risk due to variability. Sadly, instead of focusing on fixing the system, managers are instructed to manage by objectives, to get the right people on the bus, to provide more aggressive reward structures. All these things do is make the situation worse in the long term, as they prioritize individual achievement over constancy of purpose. A case could be made that Dr. Deming's teachings are more relevant today than they were in 1980. Realizing the benefits of the teaching is hard. It's very hard. Old beliefs must be replaced with new ones. A massive investment must be made in the education of how we think, create, and lead. Dr. Deming's seminars identified a huge market opportunity for experts, gurus, authors, and consultants. In time, Deming's message of how he had helped turn Japan into the world's second biggest economic power would be repackaged in a multitude of ways. Descendants of Dr. Deming's work include Six Sigma, Lean, Toyota Production System, Continuous Improvement, Baldrige Award, ISO Certification, and others. Deming today. Today, advocates of Dr. Deming's teachings are still learning, studying, and applying his teachings. Peter Senge at MIT has taken system thinking to new places with his book, The Fifth Discipline. Russell Acuff transformed management thinking around the world through his work at the Wharton School and books. The Deming Institute runs annual conferences where experts take Dr. Deming's work forward. Sadly, Kevin Cahill, Dr. Deming's grandson, told me, In the Far East, there was a strong interest in my grandfather's work. In North America and Europe, it's more challenging to get leaders to adopt the mindset. A recent Deming success story is Pixar, the company that transformed how animated movies are created with such successes as Toy Story, Cars, Monster Inc., Finding Nemo, A Bug's Life, and others. Ed Catmull, co-founder of Pixar with Steve Jobs and John Lasseter, credits Dr. Deming as a guiding force behind their success. Quote, "Deming's work would make a huge impression on me and help frame my approach to managing Pixar." A Toyota leader predicts the future. In 2002, I gave a keynote address to over 1,000 Toyota executives. For dinner, I was seated with one of the very senior Toyota leaders. I asked him, "What automaker are you most concerned about? Detroit? Germany?" He shook his head. "No, Korea." I said, "But Korea makes crappy cars. The quality is horrible." He smiled and said, "So did we for many years. But your Dr. Deming taught us a system for making them better." And then he went on to say, "Korea has studied how we did it. They are hungry to learn. We have lost that hunger." The rest of the story. The decline of market share in the automobile market in USA companies has continued. In 1980, the panic was about a decline from 82% to 78% in just 3 years. Today, the market share of the big three has dropped from 78% in 1980 to under 43% in 2009. Dr. Deming's mindset was embraced by the big three automakers to varying degrees. The Ford Motor Company, the only one of the three with founding family involvement, made the greatest commitment to the Deming mindset. Bill Conway speculated to me that it was probably the reason that Ford was able to avoid the bankruptcies that occurred with Chrysler and GM. The prediction of the Toyota leader I had dinner with also came true, as Korean car makers have gone from low single-digit market share to nearly 10% of the U.S. market. Perspective on Japan. The challenges that the Japanese economy has faced in recent years does not diminish the miracle of what they have and are accomplishing. They are the 61st largest country in the world in landmass and the 10th in population, yet today they are third in the world for gross domestic product after the USA and China. Sony has lost its way since the retirement of founder and Deming follower Akio Morita. Akio anticipated the music revolution and led them to great success with Walkman products. The company totally missed the shift to digital music players. Actually, they designed and built two different digital players that were not easy to use or even compatible with each other. Toyota is a global success. They anticipated the world of hybrid vehicles long before others did, and as a result, they own many patented technologies in the area. In the recent short term, they have experienced some quality challenges. With the return of the family to leadership, Akio Toyota becoming CEO, there are indications that the leadership are confronting reality and returning to following the Deming way of anticipating the future. Innovation engineering is just a small part of Deming's teachings. Innovation engineering applies the system thinking of Dr. Deming to innovation. It also applies his teachings on alignment of the organization behind a common aim. Plan, do, study, act cycles of learning, focus on the end customer to determine true value, the need to get ahead of customers, theory of variation, collaboration with suppliers, customers, and between employees, constancy of purpose, responsibility of leadership, and common versus special cause errors. However, there is much, much more to learn from Dr. Deming. His system of profound knowledge outlines 14 points for management and 7 deadly diseases. To learn more about Dr. Deming's teaching, the best place to start are his 2 books, Out of the Crisis and The New Economics. To learn even more, attend one of the Deming Institute seminars. For information on them, go to www.deming.org. I hope to see you there. This book ends with one more chapter on a Q&A interview with Dr. Deming's grandson, Kevin Cahill.